Johnny O's in the house. It's a good day kicking off the week on a Wild West Guns of Gold Money. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Good weekend, Johnny O?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always, I don't say bittersweet, but for us, this last weekend before training camp, you're fired up about the season, you're ready to go. At the same time, you're looking at it and saying, okay, deep breath, let's go, because it's pretty much a Wild West guns and gold fall.
6 months, until, right?
Yeah, I mean,
basically.
So you go through that little, back to school feeling this last weekend of, okay, I'm excited to see it. These are the last couple of things we're doing, before you get that, with the time off before you really get going. So, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. Guns and gold.
I agree with you. It really is in our jobs. Two different years, practically. Mm-hmm. I was telling my wife that's how I feel now. It's like 6 months I am one person, 6 months I'm another.
Right.
And it's great, and because we do love football so much. You're
right.
Not in this, I would hope most people who are in these kind of jobs love the
right.
game, or else you're just a
right.
miserable
you enjoy
person.
Them both. But
right.
I get emails all the time about the dead zone. It's a big thing in the ozone, the dead zone where, I can't wait for this to get over with. And I was like, don't wish it away.
Right.
It'll be there soon enough.
Right.
But I get it. If you're a fan, you can't wait for it to get started. And we can't wait for it to get started either. But, you try to enjoy both. Once it's here, you're going, let's go, we'll be in, and every Monday I'll turn into the next. You know
it
I mean?
Takes on a life of its own, right?
And,
I mean,
and it's great. But, right. Now it's time to take... It's time to take that deep breath, and we're back to it.
Especially after another 6 weeks go by, and we're into that regular season schedule.
Right.
Then every day, you really know, every Monday's kind of got the same things.
Sure.
You expect the same things, and every day has a particular flow to it. Dan brought up a point about expectations for this football team. Privately, behind closed doors, I know the Jags talk about publicly, we don't focus in on a number of wins. We focus in on the process and all these wonderful concepts. And I'm sure to a large degree they try to think in that rationale. But they have to. They're human beings. They have to be sitting back there saying, boy, we could do this year. If things fell into place, what do you think our high water mark is? What do you think in the heart of hearts of guys like Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell, their realistic expectations, or maybe not even realistic.
Right.
What are their dream expectations? What do you think they talk about behind closed doors?
Well, I'm sure they dream about, making a push, getting a good start. All of a sudden, you're near 500 going into the second half of the season. You put some things together and you make a push for the, all those things are in your dreams. I would be surprised, really, if anywhere in Gus's mind he has a number, because he's just so focused on the way he does things and on the way I doubt he allows himself to think of a number. I really think this team wants to see get in that single digit on both sides of the ledger, meaning 7-9, somewhere in that range.
7-9, 8-9, and 7,
yeah,
somewhere
in there. And there are fans who get angry with me when I say that, because it's like, why aren't we going for the Super Bowl? This team should be because you had 3 wins last year. And in the NFL, you've got a 16-game season, so there's only 16 opportunities to win. So if you go from 3 to 7 or 8, that's a huge jump. It's not a historical jump. There have been teams who have done more, but the teams who have done more are the teams sitting in the NFL record book. A 4, 5, 6-game improvement is impressive in this league. And I think that sort of thing is realistic. But even more than that, I keep saying that you want to see a season where at the end of the year there are substantially fewer games where you look back and go, they weren't in it. You want to see that feeling. And we all know what it is when a team had a chance in every game, when a team was there, was competing, because you're going to win some of those, you're going to get some, and then you can start building on that. So as much as you want to see 7, 8 wins, 6 in that range, somewhere in that range, so improvement, you want it to feel right, and you want it to feel like, okay, they went toe-to-toe, they weren't outmanned. That means the roster, which was not at a level of the better teams 2 years ago, is now getting to that level, and then you can start getting above that level.
Tony, I think, again, I agree with John on a lot of things he's saying here in terms of the way Gus approaches things, but in the back of my mind, I still have to believe as much as he tries to adhere to his philosophical tenets of how you approach building a football team and building towards success, he's got to have a number in his head. Doesn't he at least dream like, hey, wow, if we could get this, if we get off to a good start, we could get on a run, we could be a 9-win team, whatever the case may be.
Honestly, with all the time we've spent around these guys, I think the number is one. I really do think they're focused on let's beat Carolina. Like, I think that is the focus in the building. Let's get off to a good start. If you ask Gus Bradley or Dave Caldwell about the Super Bowl this year, right? If you ask them on air, they're going to say, of course the goal is to win the Super Bowl, right? They're not going to dodge that kind of thing. Of course the goal is to win the Super Bowl. So for the fans out there who feel like maybe the goals aren't as high as they should be, these guys want to win. Believe me, they want to win, but I think there are realistic expectations to throw on a team that has won 7 games in 2 years. And I don't think saying they should be competing for a Super Bowl in 2015 is a realistic expectation. I think start the season the right way, which you haven't done in 5 or 6 years, right? Just start it the right way. You got 2 games at home to get the thing started. Win at least one of those games. Hopefully both of them, but win at least one of those games. And see where you are. If you are pushing for a single-digit loss season, maybe the expectations change at some point,
as
right?
As the season goes along.
Right. Maybe you start winning some games and you're like, look, we can make the playoffs this year. And if you can make the playoffs, you can win, right? It's about getting into the tournament at some point. I think that you can't put too much on them to start. But they're not going to dodge the questions about, does this team want to win a Super Bowl in 2015? Of course. That's the goal of everybody in this building, is to win a championship. It's not a realistic expectation given where they've been. But, of course, if they get in a position where that becomes realistic, that talk will be here in the building.
I also think there's so many new things going on. You've got so many new faces coming in. You've got so much, you know, Marone, Olsen, Jeremy Parnell, Julius Thomas. And that's only...
That's just a couple of the players. Yeah.
It's almost like there are so many things to figure out and make sure, okay, that's good, okay, that's good, okay, that's what we wanted to see, that it's almost like there's so many short-term things they got to look at that to think of a number or to think that far ahead, I think it's very difficult. For me anyway, I'm looking at all these training camp storylines, and it's like you got to get to them all before you can even start thinking about what the number's going to be.
All right, John Osier, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here with you, Jaguars today. Folks, if you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Got a lot of things we'll discuss today, including what we want to hear from Blake Bortles as he's back after a summer, getting ready with his preparation, working on his mechanics out on the West Coast, throwing with some of his teammates, mentally getting a break for the first time in a long time since he ended his college football career. A lot of different things. He'll talk to the media at 11:30 today, right? I imagine Johnny O will be leaving us a little bit early today.
11:25.
We'll monitor your Twitter feed during the time that Blake is speaking with the assembled media, and we're hopeful to have him on either tomorrow or Wednesday here live on Jaguars Today as well to follow up on some of the things he discusses today. Today's question of the day, not specifically Jaguar-related, but Ray Rice, I've noticed, has been in the news a little bit more in the last week with some news that one team was prepared to sign him until their owner put the kibosh on that, as well as a domestic violence advocacy group speaking out on his behalf based on the work that he's done with them since knocking out his fiance, Janae, all those many months ago that started this whole saga that had him not play last year in the National Football League. So the question of the day today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is does Ray Rice deserve another chance in the National Football League? Would you be okay with your team, whoever that is, signing Ray Rice, if you assume that they felt he could help the football team? It's not a question about his football abilities and whether or not he's going to help you win games or not. Assuming that if a team signs him, they think he can help them on the field, would you be okay with that from a PR standpoint, from an off-the-field standpoint? So we'll discuss that today. We'll talk about Blake Bortles and some of this rookie class coming in as well. And you know what? Considering how much I complain, I have to say, thank you. I'm not sure quite to who. The IT department, Tony, Shad himself. Somebody delivered us some Microsoft Surface tablets. And while the screen may be small, my heart is large because I can now actually navigate between web pages without it taking minutes at a time to flip between different web pages. So we've got computer technology that is catching up with the times here on Jaguars Today. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. 641-1010 is the way to get on board. MD_1010XL at John Osier and at 1010XL Fat Tony, your Twitter handles, and of course the Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business as well. We'll continue on in a moment. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Jaguars Today kicking off, finally, training camp week, which will officially kick off on Friday. Veterans, the remainder of the veterans, in addition to quarterbacks that are already coming in today, will show up on Thursday. That's their due date anyway. And the rookies will get, I guess, a little more indoctrination and to what to expect with the camp coming up this weekend. I'm a little bit crushed over the last 10 minutes or so since Tyler did some internet sleuthing.
Yeah.
And he told me my favorite story of the day about a Wyoming butcher who had a taste for cow eyes. Apparently it's a false story.
Yes, it is.
It's a hoax. Oh, I was hoaxed, Tony.
What's the name of the site? Crazed?
Crazed.
Apparently all the stories on there are fake.
Is that right? Is it like the Onion kind of deal?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And a bunch of other sites. Like, I was looking at fakenews.com, wrote an article about the fake eyeball dude. And apparently the picture they use is actually a man who was arrested last year for some kind of child abuse of some sort. So
he looks like, yeah.
Yeah,
he,
it's
he
not that guy's sketchy name, but they just made up a story. Now, I want to know, if you read the story, it's still worth a read.
It's tremendous fiction,
right,
anyway.
It's, how did you come up with that as fake news? It's pretty good.
And
as
it's
fake
written.
News goes.
It is written straight, right? I mean, they write it like, "Hey, here's what happened. Here's the evidence. Here's, according to police reports, this is what the guy said."
Oh, the traffic stop is tremendous.
So, if you want to know what we're talking about, and we don't want to go into too much detail here, just Google Wyoming man and eyeballs, I guess, or cow eyes, or
that'll get you there.
So that'll get you started, at least on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. It's always the highbrow stuff that I'm looking for, John. I always wonder what's going on inside your head as I go off the rails here from time to time. Question of the day, again, Ray Rice, does he deserve another shot in the National Football League? We'll talk about that later. And would you be okay with your team signing him, assuming that they felt he could help them on the field? I think that's one of the big hurdles that he's got to overcome. Man, that Junior Gallette story is absolutely nuts. Junior Gallette, who's been accused of a couple of different domestic violence issues or violence against women issues, was released by the Saints. There's a guy, he's an interior defensive lineman. He's had double-digit sacks each of the last 2 years. He's been a very productive player. And the Saints finally let him go because of his off-the-field antics. And that is, I'm not trying to downplay domestic violence by using the word antics, but you understand what I'm saying. His behavior might just be a simpler way to put it. And I'm sure there's a "my Twitter was hacked" excuse coming somewhere along the line, because his girlfriend's Twitter went to town on some details that, if they're true, would be quite an embarrassment to the New Orleans Saints organization. So we'll touch on that later in the drive around the NFL as well. All right, 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board and be a part of the program today or any day for that matter. John, with the rookies coming in today, What is the purpose of bringing them in early? What will they be doing over the next 3 days that they wouldn't have otherwise had a chance to do if they had reported with everybody else on Thursday?
A chance to get them one more look at, you know, the offense, the defense, all the stuff that they need to be.
Some kind of classroom refreshers?
Yeah, it's, you know, in a couple weeks, my son leaves for freshman orientation. Same kind of deal.
And that's all it is, basically. Yeah. Okay, we've shown you some of the stuff. You've been exposed to it. Let's see what you retained.
Right.
Let's give you a refresher course. So when these guys presumably come in, the veterans,
right,
you're going to be not falling behind, at least mentally, making mental
correct
mistakes and the like. What about with the case with the quarterbacks? Is it a case of just getting those guys the opportunity to throw a little bit?
Yes.
So the first day you're in, you're not asked to be on the field the very next day throwing a bunch of passes, taking
correct
a bunch of reps.
Correct.
and just kind of get, a gauge on where they are, too, and what...
Well, a chance for them to be a little bit ahead of the game. They need to know the offense. I mean, they need to be up to speed quicker than the rest of the guys.
What are you looking to hear from Blake today? Anything in particular? Because, I mean, these press conferences take place all around the National Football League, and it's kind of like, how did you spend your off season? How do you feel like you're better now than you were a year ago? But are there some specific things that you'd like to hear him address today?
Well, I expect him to go into a little detail about, you know, to be corny, how he spent his summer. But he was going to go back to work with Tom House a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The plan was to throw with some of the receivers locally. I expect they'll say he did that. Beyond that, he's talked so much about what he needs to do to get better and what he did in the off season to get better. And he's sort of throwing himself in the sword, so to speak, with the mechanics and the footwork, much more than I've seen a lot of young quarterbacks do, admitting that he needs to improve areas. So I'm sure he'll get into that a little bit. I'm sure he'll be asked a little bit. I don't know there's going to be a whole lot of new ground there, because he's talked about it in such detail and ad nauseum that I'm sure we'll hear it again, and that's fine because he's an upfront guy. He doesn't mind saying that he needs to improve. So I don't expect a whole lot new, only because he's talked about it so much. But, you know, it's really a day where there's sort of two back-to-school days this week. There's today when the rookies report. So, you know, we're fortunate in a sense to be able to talk to these guys when they get in, because not every team makes guys available every day. There's no rule says they have to. So it's a chance for fans to hear from Blake, to see that he's in the building, and to sort of hit the reset button and say, okay, we're moving ahead. There'll be another chance on Thursday. And these are sort of preliminary days. And then Friday will be the day that everybody's used to seeing, where, you know, everybody's coming off the field sweating and you get Gus on the field and it's bright behind the cameras. And that's when that look starts out of training camp. But the first couple of days, I think, are more resetting, meaning today and Thursday, are more resetting storylines. Thursday will be more interesting in terms of nuts and bolts, because Gus Bradley will talk, and I expect there to be Marquise Lee update, James Sample updates, and Derek Marks, just sort of resetting where those guys are going into camp. News-wise, fantasy football-wise, you're a fantasy football guy.
I like it a little bit. Tony's gotten me into it in the last year.
For people who have been paying attention all off season, I doubt Blake will break too much new ground. I mean, he's not going to say, hey, I wasn't working on, you know, there's not going to be any misdirection from Blake today, I wouldn't think.
I wonder how deep he would get into this, but I'd be curious to know, and I realize it's just a series of a handful of OTAs, what about close to a dozen practices, mm-hmm. and a mini camp, but what is the difference working with Greg Olsen, right? You know, compared to Jed Fish last year, he's only got one other guy at the National Football League level, mm-hmm. to compare it to, and it's only been in off season, so it hasn't been through the whole year, so you're not going to really know how that change impacts him until we get into the season. But I'd like to have his opinion on, you know, just what was different about, like, the day-to-day approach and maybe some of the things that they're focusing on, some of the strengths that they're focusing on, mm-hmm. and how Blake is seen through Greg Olsen's eyes and what kind of feedback he's gotten from him compared to the similar feedback he may have gotten from Fish last
year. I mean, things we heard in OTAs toward that, there were things you'd expect. Everything's great in OTAs. There's not a whole lot of tension because nothing has failed. So you're not going to get any sort of, there's no opportunity really for things to have gone bad. But, you know, Blake seems to like the offense. I think the biggest thing you heard, and you even heard after OTAs were over with, from people not speaking on the record, was that the installation went well and there were strikingly few mistakes. Players seem to be grasping it. It's very much an offense that there are some things at the line of scrimmage and there are some things in terms of choices that have to be made, and the formations aren't incredibly complex, but the things you can do out of the formations are complex. And there weren't many errors in that area, which is a good sign. Now, how much was really being thrown at them? How deep are they into that? I don't know that we're going to get great detail on that. It's probably not something that'll be shared a whole lot because they're not going to share everything. So it stands to reason that with a still a young offense and a new offense, that you wouldn't be running every detail of that playbook in preseason or the early season. That would be unrealistic.
And look, I know they try to stress them as much as possible with tempo and you know, the music and everything that's going on, but it's so much easier to remember formations and things when you're in a practice setting and you know that that's kind of the next thing up. You're going to do this, and you got, and it's a different thing when you call a formation in the middle of a game,
right,
and you know you're a young player and your head's kind of spinning, right, and there are 60,000 people screaming and all that's going on.
Well, so much of OTAs is still, and this is a tough a thing to sort of express, but because you think, okay, it's football practice, they're going over things, and it should be mock speed out there immediately. Well, OTAs in the off season for this team was very much, when they were going out on the field some of these days, it was the first time they were running these things as a group. So that period was very much, you expected them to be walking off and having conversations with coaches about, yeah, I saw this on that one. Yeah, I saw this. Should I have done this? Because it was the first time they were doing these things in front of these coaches, and it was very much a classroom setting. Training camp, one reason the rookies are in today, that will be the second time. So you expected to see faster. You expected to see better. But Gus said during OTAs, and this is a real thing, that preseason there is still going to be a learning curve with this offense. And that, I'm paraphrasing him here, but one of the things he said was you want that to go as quickly as possible. You want to get through that as quickly as possible. The goal is to get as far out of that by regular season. But the reality is with a new offense, that was the give and take with changing offensive coordinators, was that there's no way not to have a little bit of a learning curve with this.
Right, and it just comes at, it's always a bad time to have any kind of learning curve, but when you've won 7 games in 2 years as the head coach, you want to start as quickly as possible.
Well, you had to make the choice. Do I believe that a different offense is significantly better enough to make up the ground that you lost with the change?
All right, 641-1010, the phone number. And, of course, if you're outside the 904 area code, add that 904, and you're going to need that, I would assume, if you're in Slovenia, where Peter is calling from this morning. Peter, how are you, sir?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We're great. How are you? What's going on?
First of all, I'd like to give my regards to John. He's the real star of the Jaguars organization, and he's been the only bright spot for the past 3 years, along with Jackson DeVille. He knows. Well,
thank you, Peter.
Yeah, don't retire anytime soon, John. We've already lost Jackson, or at least Curtis. So,
no, we don't want to lose John.
We don't want to lose John either, Peter. What can we do for you today, man?
We're talking about the number of the wins that will have to be taken to give Gus another year.
Sure.
I believe six, seven games at least. They have this path going on. They took left tackle. They took quarterback. They took pass rusher. Unfortunately, will not be playing this year.
Right.
But they got some new players, and they got to get it done this year. 7 wins minimum.
All right, 7 minimum for Peter.
Yes.
Peter, we appreciate you flying that Jaguar flag over there in Slovenia, man, and keep listening. And we all agree, John is the backbone of the organization. There's no question.
Okay. Have
Thank
a
you, buddy.
Day.
You too, sir.
That's a weak spine.
I love getting calls from Slovenia, man. I don't know how many shows on this station are getting calls from Slovenia.
You know, I understand people wanting to talk about this number right now, but Mike, don't you think that we're going to know? You're going to see it, and you're going to know if there's progress or not, regardless of a number?
You would hope so.
I mean, you're going
to
feel it.
You can fake your way to 6 or 7 wins sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can have, like, just the if the football luck goes your way,
right,
sometimes 7 wins, you're maybe playing well above your head in one loss column, and then you can have a 4-win season that should have been an 8-win season, were it not for the bad football luck, but I don't know. I do think look, you can't go 0-16,
right?
And so there's a minimum somewhere of what Gus needs to do, and I couldn't presume to be smart enough to know what that number is, but I hear people say 6 or 7. Well, what you're saying then is 6, okay, as kind of the minimum. If you're saying 6 or 7, that's what you're saying, and so what if it's 5? Are you going to – you know what I mean? I mean, are people going to be lining up at the pitchforks if it's one less than
their minimum
expectation?
Depends on how the 5 happened, right?
Yeah,
and it goes back to that point of, are they getting blown out in 8? You know, I think there is a feeling, right? Like, even feeling counts for something. I don't think it counts for a lot, right? But you feel like the team was better in 2014 than 2013. Like, I think the team was better last year. Their record was worse, right?
I would agree with that, especially when you look at the first half of 2013.
Right. I think the team was better in 2014. They won one less game. At some point, the feeling you have about the team getting better has to match up with the results that they're getting. And I think that's the point going into year 3. I don't know what that number looks like exactly, but it's more than they've won to this point. And what exactly that is, I don't know. But it's got to be better than it's been in the first 2 years.
The first half of the opener against Philly last year was better than the first 8 games of the previous season combined. Right? I mean, truly, the first 8 games. So the bar was pretty low to jump over. But think about this as we go to break, and we'll talk about this coming back. What's more important, a fast start or a fast finish for this football team? If we're, again, talking about the same kind of victory total, you'd like to have both. You like to start fast and maintain throughout the season and be a playoff team. But is it better for this team this year for the stability of the organization to get off to a quick start or to finish strong in December, if you're assuming they come up short of the postseason in either scenario? So we'll talk about that as well. Take more of your calls at 641-1010 or 904-641-1010. Probably a country code. Is it a plus one no matter where you are, or is that just when we're calling on American phones back to the States?
I'm not really that international.
Come on, Johnny. You're the backbone of the organization. Yeah. What in the world? That's unacceptable. We'll try to endeavor to find that out.
That's a little alarming.
Over the course of the week.
I feel a little pressure.
Well, you know,
it's just you being you. Up.
Just continue to do the things that have made you the backbone, and you know, don't think about it.
Pressure is a good
thing.
Just
let it be.
Just
right?
Keep my eyes forward. Don't ask any questions.
Yeah, just get your grind. Like Gus said, you know, you just focus on the process, and then the results will come. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board, whether you're in Slovenia or elsewhere. Jaguar fans, it's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday here live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories is Wild West Guns and Gold. Revolvers to sporting arms, everything in between, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, you name it, Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West. Visit Guns for Jax, guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or stop by their place on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. Oh, we'll get back into whether or not it's better for this team, or I guess from a perception standpoint, in some ways, to start fast or finish fast if the record's going to end up somewhere around the same area. Got one in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, which is the same number as a dial-in line, 641-1010. Texter says, I think it's more important to finish well, and I'll give you one reason, 1996. Okay, and I get that, and but I'm assuming they don't make the playoffs. Let's assume this team is going to win 7 games, 6 games regardless. Is it better for them to get off with maybe a pair of wins at home, and then they upset the Colts in Indy, and they're 3-1 after 4 weeks. Lose to New England, let's say. But then they only win 3 games the rest of the way. And are they seen as fading, yet they take the pressure off early in the season? Can you imagine the fever for Jaguar football, John, if they're off to a 3-1 start this year?
Yeah, I don't think you – again, this is sort of wishy-washy. I don't think you want to start too slow, because you've had bad seasons the last few years.
Particularly bad starts.
And that's, I think this team is pretty mentally strong for a young team. They've shown, you know, you've been around. I don't think they've fallen apart even in tough times the last few years. You know, there hasn't been that friction. There hasn't been, you know, the unhappiness that there was in, what was it, Malarkey's year, 2012.
Sure.
So I don't think you want to start too slow, but I'm a big believer in the fast finish, not necessarily because it gives you any momentum in the post going into the off season. I'm not too big on that, but you want to see at the end of the season, last eight games kind of show you where you are, especially for a young team once it's sort of coming together. I think you get a better feel for who you really are in the second half of the season, how you're playing, especially if the teams you're playing are still in it. That's a little bit of a factor. If you're playing against teams that still think they have a chance and you're faring well, then you're playing against motivated teams. You're doing the right thing. You sort of figured out what you want to be. And some of that can carry over into how you plan for the next season.
Yeah, and if you use the example of 96.
Not momentum necessarily, but just I think who you really are. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. If you use the example of 96 and you're talking about closing strong and you can carry that momentum from week to week within that season, and the Jags clearly did in 96, and they believed, and that was as much as anything, the confidence that they had in themselves. But I'm talking about a scenario where let's say they're going to go 6-10 or 7-9, and let's say they're 3-11, right? And I'm doing the math wrong here. 3-9, right? Through 12 games, going into the final four games of the season, and they win out. I could see some people saying, "Wow, that's great. We do have organizational momentum going into the off season. Now we won seven games. We closed strong. We're ready to go. We're raring to go." You'd have other people saying, "Well, that's great. You finally decided to win some games once you had buried yourself."
Yeah, it didn't matter.
And it didn't matter anymore, and who cares what you did once you started 3-9 and you killed our hopes once again.
It feels like, once you get down to the end of the season, it might feel differently. But the scenario you just threw out feels like you've almost got to judge them based on their record when they felt like they were in it.
Right.
And because... Otherwise,
when it mattered, you didn't do anything under that scenario.
Yeah, so I get your point. I guess when I'm saying the last eight games, if it's a case of winning the last four when you're completely out of it, if you're 1-11 and go 5-11, that's going to get poo-pooed a lot.
Right.
If you have a solid, strong eight games and you're playing against teams, again, that are in it. If you're beating teams that are 1-11, then that's going to get discounted a little bit because they may be injured, they may be hurt, they may be without a quarterback. A lot of it's going to depend on how you fare against a certain strengths of opponent, and I don't think we know that yet.
6-4-1-10-10, phone lines open to you. Let's go back to them this morning and talk to Eric next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning, you guys. How you doing this morning?
Great. What's up, man?
All right, I'm celebrating my 33rd birthday today, man.
33rd, huh? Congrats.
Oh, appreciate it, man. Thank you. I just wanted to know, when you look at some of them other teams, really don't got no defense like that. And I believe the Jaguars probably can do a real good push to the playoff this year because a lot of them teams out there don't really got no Seattle defense like that. Tell me what you think, because I'm kind of looking at like 10 and probably 6 right now. Tell me what you think about that, man. I'll just go ahead and leave that on the air.
All right, happy birthday, Eric. Don't disappoint the birthday boy, John. What do you think about what he just said right there?
That was not Terrence.
No, it wasn't. Well played. That was not Terrence. Terrence has him 3-13, I believe.
I would say everybody in this room would love to see 10-6.
Who wouldn't?
After the seasons the last few years, it's a different story. There'd be energy. I have a tough time predicting a 7-win turnaround just because I haven't seen it yet. And there's an awful lot of growth that has to take place at the same time to get off to a really fast start that I think would result in 10-6. But hey, go for it.
Well, and the point he was making, he said not many teams have a Seattle-like defense. Now, the Jags are trying to build that model of defense,
right,
but they're not there. Right? Let me ask you this. I think people assume, just based on the way the last couple of seasons have gone, defense is ahead of the offense, right? Just in terms of the stature on this team, right? You've had the 45 sacks last year, which was a nice bounce back total. You've got clearly some good young playmakers in Colvin and Telvin, and I'm not trying to leave anybody out, but just to name a couple there. But on offense now, they really have done a lot that if the new guys click, that offensive line could be actually pretty good, right? And you've got Julius Thomas here. People have raved about Allen Robinson. Mike DeRocco, in his he's writing a series of columns this week about potential breakout players with the Jags. He started with Allen Robinson, a lot of people would nominate, I think. And he described him, in his words, as being the most outstanding player at OTAs, even above Julius Thomas, who I thought was getting almost universal praise. But regardless,
right,
put him kind of on that level, like, wow, we've got another potential breakout playmaker. So you've got a guy who's everybody's excited to see more of on the field at wide receiver. You've got a proven commodity at tight end. You bring in the new running back. And Dave Caldwell has already told many of us, including us here on Jaguars today, how much they want to make him the workhorse guy.
Yeah.
You've got another year of development for Blake. Could the offense really surprise and be the star unit on this team?
You just named, and I'm very old school, very conservative by nature, so I hate to put T.J. Yeldon yet in a class of breakout player. But he's a top 36
I'm just talking
drafted.
About new blood.
No, I know, but I think he's going to be very good, and I think he's going to be very good quickly. So if that's the case, and that's a big if, well, now you're talking about Allen Robinson, Julius Thomas, and T.J. Yeldon, almost three new players. Allen Robinson played for 10 games last
sure.
year, but I think he would tell you that he was not yet playing the aggressive style, the confident, that second-year style that he thinks he'll play this year. So I think he and the organization think he's going to be a much different player. Well, you've added three guys who I think have potential to be at least good skill position players to an offense that, frankly, at times last year didn't look like they had any for a while. So that could be a big jump. And then Brandon Linder in his second year, the offensive line, you know, you hate to say it, but it was such a low bar that if they're even a little better, then the offense has a chance to be significantly better. And for this offense, which has been 32 or 31, you know, last 3 or 4 years, a little better if you combine a solid defensive effort, which they got most of the time last year, gets them back to where they're competitive in games.
Week in, week out.
And that's what you want, especially early, is to say, okay, now they're on even footing again, which for the last 2 years, that's something we talked about. I haven't felt going into the season like they were on even footing roster-wise the last 2 years. Now you feel like they might be.
Back to the phones we go, 641-1010, the number. Kenny, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you? Hi, Kenny. Kenny, did you drop the phone? What's going on there?
I don't know.
All right.
It's falling down the
put
well.
Put him on hold. Let's get Joe in then.
Struggle's real.
Before we break. Joe, you're next up
yes.
on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, my comment is referring to wins and losses. I want to remind the fans, I'm, of course, a Tom Coughlin supporter. I hated to see him go. And you think back to his last season, he was 6-10. Two games in particular, Cincinnati had the game won in the fourth quarter, interception in the end zone. They went on to win. And we all remember the Hail Mary Cleveland at our stadium. So, you know, 8-8 all of a sudden, would Coughlin have been here? And look what he did after that. So I really like the regime we have, and I hope we don't make the same type of mistakes. You know, the NFL is so close, so much parity that you have to look at it. If they're competitive, wins and losses isn't everything.
Well, all right, for your vantage point, and I'm, you know, that's one vantage point, I would say to most fans, wins and losses are not everything, but they're one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle.
They're not everything, they're just the only thing.
To some, it certainly is, right? That's the bottom line. Don't tell me, don't make excuses. How many did you win? How many did you lose? As Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are. I will say this, I can't speak particularly for Joe. I'm going to assume he is being forthright in his comments on Tom Coughlin, but it strikes me as a Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points kind of situation. You know how many people were in, I think, did they play in Hershey that time when Wilt scored 100, and there were like 700,000 people in attendance at that game, right, according to lore and history. The amount of people that just didn't want to see Tom Coughlin go grows every year with the more success he had in New York, and I think we are totally forgetting the feeling in this organization, the circumstances, the angst, the players, the locker room kind of wearing thin, Tom Coughlin's message, everything that was going on. There were, I was doing radio then too, John, and there was a hue and cry for Tom Coughlin's head back then. But I guess maybe all those people out there who knew that he would go on to this great success with the Giants should have spoken up louder back then in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic that's been gone over and over
again. I know.
He's a great coach. I was not here at the time. From my vantage point in Indy, you know, the people at the Colts at the time, which were Bill Polian, Tony Dungy, people like that running it, always, even in Tom's last couple of years, spoke to what a great coaching job he was doing with a talent base that had diminished. At the same time, Tom was responsible for the talent base here too at the time. So, you know, Wayne decided he needed to make a change.
And right.
That's not news. That's 12 years old. But that's what
you'd like to rewrite history. You'd like to have him back. But when you go back and really put yourself in that circumstance without knowing what the future would hold. And by the way, who knows? Maybe, yes, if Tom Coughlin had had the same group of players he had up in New York, he would have won Super Bowls here. But, you know, it's apples and oranges
for a long time.
Degree.
You know, to give credit where it's due, for a long time under Del Rio and Shaq Harris, this was a good team that competed for
the postseason at least.
12. I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't here, so I forget the records were 12-4. I mean,
their
the
issue was they
very
faded in December though.
Right.
Some of Jack Del Rio's teams, they'd be in position and they'd fade, and that became a mantra with him over and over.
But I know the I mean, I was covering the Colts at the time, so I was peripherally aware of the Jaguars, and I covered them twice a year. The Colts were on a historical regular season run at the time, and had several seasons where getting past, when they got past the Jaguars and eliminated from the AFC South, which they did every year, but it was a collective sigh of relief because that was the team they had to get past. So without the Colts, the historic quarterback at the time, being around, that era looks probably a lot different for this team. So, you know, it's difficult to go back and rewrite the Coughlin history.
All right, coming up next, we've got this date in football history. We've got the drive around the NFL. More of your phone calls welcome as well at 641-1010. With John Osier and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Birthdays galore on this date in football history, in addition to this being the date in the year 2015 that quarterbacks and rookies reported for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Hey, that's today. Born on this date in 1939, Irv Cross. People of a certain age remember Irv. I certainly do, on CBS television. But he played for a number of years as the defensive back, both with the Eagles and the Rams in the 1960s. 76 years old today. Was employed as an analyst and commentator for CBS Sports from 1971 on, when he became the first African-American to work full-time as a sports analyst on national television. And he did that until 1994, in addition to his work on CBS's NFL coverage, including co-anchoring the NFL Today from its inception in 1975 through 1989. Cross called NBA basketball, track and field, and gymnastics as well at various times for CBS, and he served as athletic director at Idaho State University from 1996 to 1998. Pretty well-rounded, and a happy 76 to Irv Cross, a trendsetter in television coverage of the National Football League. 1984, born on this date, longtime Jaguar nemesis with the Colts. Last year played with the 49ers, Antoine Bethea. Three Pro Bowls. John, you covered Antoine Bethea. Always seemed like a really smart guy, physical guy. I just thought a good all-around safety, and certainly three Pro Bowl nominations back that up.
Yeah, one of my favorite guys you cover. I mean, always a very, you guys have been around athletes, very aware guy, the kind of guy you pass in the hallway and you stop and talk to him. You talk about things outside of football. I mean, he's just a, not all the players you cover fall into the category of, if I knew that guy outside of football, I'd probably like him and, you know, I want to hang around him. Antoine Bethea is one of those guys.
Also born in this state, 1988, Ryan Tannehill turns 27 years old today, and longtime great Jaguar center Mike Brewster celebrating a happy 26th birthday. Your season opening starter for the Jacksonville
Jaguars.
That
was Jaguars. A mean laugh, Tony.
It's well, a cackle.
I just go back to last year at this time, and we were like, well, which of these couple guys is going to take hold of that center position?
Mike Bruce has been working out, baby. He's beefing up.
Goodness.
All right, that is this date in football history, and it's brought to you by our friends at Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. So, again, that's this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
St. Louis Rams special team coordinator John Fossil saved a life this weekend on a beach in California. Fossil says he was boogie boarding on Manhattan Beach when he and another surfer, Jim Burton, noticed a swimmer fighting and flailing against a riptide. Fossil and Burton swam out to the man, carried him back into safety. They said when they reached the drowning man that his eyes were rolling to the back of his head and could have been mere seconds from going down for the last time. The Indianapolis Colts released starting right tackle Gosder Chehalis over the weekend. Chehalis signed a 5-year deal with the Colts in free agency 2 years ago, but has been disappointing in his time in Indy. He fought injuries throughout the season last year, wasn't available during the Colts' run to the AFC Championship game last year. He has missed the team's offseason after surgery on his knee, and now the Colts are simply moving on from Chehalis. Jack Muhort, a second-round pick in 2014 out of Ohio State, is penciled in now as the starting right tackle for the Colts when they open training camp later this week. And we mentioned it earlier, speaking of players being cut, the Saints parted ways with pass rusher Junior Gallette over the weekend. Gallette took to his girlfriend's Twitter. I assume it may be Gallette. It could be his girlfriend, but they could have shared some inside-the-building gossip with between each other. But the barbs being thrown at the Saints on that account, pretty incredible. It starts with a tweet, Fritos, Sean. We go back to Friday with
yes.
Fritos this salsa. Fritos, Sean, who will replace Junior, Stills, Jimmy, Lofton, Grubbs production? Laugh out loud, y'all got worse. He also let the world know that offensive lineman Zach Strief hasn't been the same since he caught his wife cheating on him after the 2013 season.
I believe the term raw dogging might have been involved.
It was. When asked about Breeze, whoever was on the account at the time responded, he's good, but diminishing arm strength, lack of 06 Colston, that man washed up. I assume that's in talking about Marcus Colston. Cooks can't do it on his own. Then he goes all in on Sean Payton, at Sean Payton on Twitter. Tell the world why the Saints train in West Virginia because your girlfriend is from there.
How do you spell
It's a word I'm not going to say on the radio. Then it has a hashtag I'm not going to say on the radio, but one I will, hashtag Percocet Abuser.
Oh, no.
Follow that up with, I will be shocked if Saints win more than 6 games next year. Sean will get fired, making emotional decisions, shaking my head. Hashtag you not Parcells, never will be. And finally, one more at Sean Payton from this account. Why don't you tell him about you showing up to team meetings drunk instead of saying leadership? You are the leader, you idiot. So that's Junior.
Here we go. There's some other highlights in there. That doesn't really, it just scratches the surface, Tony, I think, of the entirety of the Twitter rampage that he or his girlfriend went on. And apparently Keenan Lewis can't cover Julio Jones, which is no shame. Not many can, right? But he also apparently is an ostrich-looking biznitch. So there you go. Poor Keenan Lewis getting called out like that. It's not his fault he looks like an ostrich, allegedly. As far as that goes, apparently, according to Tyler, SportsCenter is going about to go live from Jaguars training camp. What camp?
They're doing what?
Huh? They're going live. Are they out at the statue? They should be in here with the terrific coverage Jaguars Today is providing all of you out there. They should have cameras on us right now. But I guess what bottom of the hour, Blake will be at the podium talking.
Like.
So
sure, why not?
SportsCenter will probably eavesdrop on that, and maybe some of the other guys, some of the rookies coming in today as well. Is it just mostly Blake that you're looking for?
I believe there are rookies coming in. Yeah. And
just speak to the media,
yeah,
basically. So
I'm mainly looking for, you know, Blake Bortles. I like shiny objects. So, yeah.
I gotcha. I mean, he's the quarterback. I get it. I get why he's the lead story. I'm not questioning that.
I'm distracted by the quarterback.
Just asking more for information's sake out there. I do believe there are others. Will that stream live? Will we see this on Jaguars.com? I'm guessing, maybe.
I believe so.
I would think so, right?
We'll see.
Jaguars.com?
I'm not sure on that, so...
Well, it is the organization that employs the backbone of the organization.
Yeah.
That's you.
I will be there.
All right. John will be there. he'll be live tweeting.
Strong spine.
One way or the other. You'll get some information.
Weak core, strong spine.
All right. We've got this on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Quite a lengthy one here. I love it as I read it on my new Microsoft Surface tablet here, Tony, because I can quickly navigate to this text. Texter says, I really wish we as a fan base would stop babying this football team. Take the bottle out of their mouth and demand them to stand up and do better. Telvin Smith said it best. It's nothing else to do. It's up to the players. We at least need to get a winning record to stop the franchise record of consecutive losing seasons. Enough is enough. You know, it's funny. One of the first headlines I saw this morning was Sammy Watkins being quoted up in Buffalo saying, if we don't make the playoffs, there's a problem. You know, there's going to be a problem. And I thought, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Sammy Watkins, Buffalo was an okay team last year. And I think part of that is wherever Rex Ryan goes, he encourages his players to be brash. He celebrates it. He's okay with it, what have you. And so they tend to run their mouths a little bit more. Look, I experienced it as a Jets fan for a number of years, and I'm not going to say it's a bad thing now that he's in Buffalo. It's just that's the way it is. But, I mean, look, if a Jaguar – and they're not in the same stratosphere right now because the Jags have only won the 9 games over the last 3 years. But, you know, if a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in a while, Buffalo hasn't been in a while, right, Tony? I mean,
no.
It's early 2000s, I want to say, right? So they've got, if I'm not, do they have the longest active streak in the National Football League of not making the postseason?
I think so.
I think it's since the Music City Miracle, right?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think that was the last game they played, which is the ironic thing is they had a game won. I mean, Rob Johnson might have become put a stranglehold on the quarterback position because it continued to be a flip-flop debate between him and Flutie after that. But he let him back late in that game to the lead to where Tennessee just had seconds left on the clock to pull off the miracle, and they certainly did. But I do think that's the last time Buffalo played in the postseason.
I did not see that game, matter of fact. I was on my way to Seattle to cover Marino and the Seahawks played the next day, and the winner of that game was going to be playing Jacksonville the next week, which is Miami game 62-7. So I was in the airport. I was in the air. I remember landing and calling Prisco, you know, to find out what had happened.
Yeah.
And him
describing the mayhem of
it. Yeah, and it was one of those where you're listening to it, and you can't really figure out what he's talking about, and then you see it. Oh, okay, well.
Do you think this team is treated with too much kid gloves, honestly? I mean, I think most people in the media here are pretty, you know, we're all hopeful and we use terms like that. And not to say that, you know, when they play poorly or they make dumb mistakes or things like that, they're not held accountable. But expectation-wise, is it enough to sit there and say we hope they get better?
But I come at it from the attitude that I know where they were 2 years ago, and I know where they're trying to get to. I feel like I know what's realistic. So, you know, I'm sure from some people's perspective, when you say what you want to see is improvement, and it may not be realistic to think they're going to go 10-6, that's kid gloves. I don't see it that way.
All right, 6-4-1-10-10. If you'd
I'll
like
tell
to
you,
get in.
I don't know how many NFL cities. You survived 7 wins in 2 years. And when O'Halloran was in here with us last week and talked about no coach has ever won that few games and gotten a third year.
In the Super Bowl era,
right,
I think he said.
In this league. It hasn't happened. So I don't think there's a lot of places where you get this opportunity to continue to build
right.
the way these guys
and
have.
The devil's advocate argument there would be when the three, meaning Khan, Bradley and Caldwell, decided to take the approach they did in the first year of this, which was 2013, there was a little bit of an implication that the first 2 years were going to be tough, maybe historically. So you sort of went with an unusually young cut-to-the-core rebuild, and when you did that, it was going to be tough not to do what they've done, which are the 7 wins. So that's sort of the argument.
Sure.
Before continuing to allow the build.
It's another indication of just how different this rebuild is compared to anything that's ever been tried. But like we said, when it started, doesn't mean it's going to work. we're just going to see how this thing is going to play out, and there's more patience in this organization because they are trying something that hasn't been tried exactly this way. It could blow up in everyone's face.
Sure.
They could be terrible this year. We don't know. We'll see what the results are in 2015.
All right, phone lines remain open, 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. The question of the day presented by the Tom Bush family of dealerships asking you about Ray Rice, who's been in the news a little bit more this past week. We'll go through the story. There is a domestic violence advocacy group out there for the victims of domestic violence that is supporting Ray Rice getting a second chance. Our question to you today is twofold. Does he deserve another chance in the NFL? And would you be okay with that chance coming on your favorite team, presuming he could help you on the field? Would you be okay with the baggage that Ray Rice brings to the table? We'll get to your responses coming up a little bit later on that as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher here with you. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. So all right, Johnny O, Backbone. Is that his new nickname, Tony? What do you think? That'll last a week at least.
Sure.
Backbone, he's the spine of the organization. He has gone to get set up. What does setting up entail for John? Taking his seat and opening up his laptop on his lap?
That's pretty much it, right? He's got to get the good seat, though.
Yes. Well, as wouldn't they save that for the Backbone? You'd think he has that.
I don't know.
It's like a roped-off seating area at Jaguar press conferences.
Could be a lot more. A lot of people are already over there, I got a feeling.
Johnny O is strolling down the hallway. It was Mike DeRocco doing a live hit on SportsCenter. And what do they call him?
DeRocco.
DeRocco. Hey, learn your own people. Tony Smythe, Mike Dempsey here with you on Jaguars Today. See what I did right there? Ray Rice's question today. One of our Terrences out there, Terrence Wilson, said, I love you, Mike. Every time you see that coming, you know there's a but.
But
a terrible question. The question is, does Ray Rice deserve a second chance in the National Football League, and would you be okay with that chance coming with the team you root for? The reason I bring it up, this terrible question, is twofold. A, there was a report last week that a team was prepared to sign him until the owner got cold feet and stepped in and he nixed it and he said, no, I'm not taking that PR hit for a guy who had 3.1 yards per carry. And that's a big factor in this. Ray Rice had ran for 5.4 yards per carry.
If it was 2012 Ray Rice.
Coming off 2,000 total yards, right?
Then it'd be a different story for Ray Rice right now.
Now, Adam Schefter reports that the co-founders of a national anti-domestic violence group are actually calling for Rice to get another chance. And Greg Schiano, his former coach at Rutgers, is out stumping for him. He's calling teams, saying, hey, just invite him to training camp. Don't make any promises, no guarantees, but give them a look at least. Tony Porter and Ted Bunch are co-founders of a group called A Call to Men, and they've been working with Rice since November, they said. Here are some of the things they said about him. Quote, we've been around a lot of abusive men, but our experience with Ray has been tremendously positive. We feel strongly about him having the opportunity of having a second chance. He's deserving of it. He's held himself accountable. He is saying everything you would want him to say and doing everything you would want him to do. So why wouldn't he deserve another chance? His work in the area of educating young men is more important than him getting back on the field. He knows that and has said that to us. He's seeing the bigger picture. He has a desire to compete again, but he also, but also to make a difference in the world. This is what mistakes should be about, learning from them and teaching others. We've been in front of a lot of batterers. He is as transparent as I've seen and as sincere. And as sincere, excuse me, as I've seen. These are quotes from the founders of this group. Now, I'm going to take them at their word because certainly they have an advocacy position against domestic violence that they're not going to just willy-nilly make these kind of comments about an abuser.
And I've talked to a lot more guys that have done that than I have, certainly.
But I will say this. In reading those comments, the thing that struck me where they say, we know and Ray knows, basically, that his work in the area of educating young men is more important than getting back on the field, and he is seeing the bigger picture. His desire to compete, but more so to make a difference in the world. Then why is all the story about, you know, is Ray Rice going to play football? I understand that that's a platform that brings a lot of attention, and it's easier to spread your message. But at this point in time, I think people know who Ray Rice is, and I think it's a more powerful message, quite frankly, if he just says, hey, this is what I lost, and let me just do this because it's the right thing to do and to keep other people from going down this road, whereas instead of just doing, I'm skeptical. I'm quite frankly skeptical, Tony. I said this when it happened, that a guy, I don't believe that the first time you lay your hands on a woman is a closed fist punch to the face. Okay? I just don't think it goes from zero, never having put your hands on a woman, to punching her in the face, your fiance, right, and knocking her out cold. I think he has probably done this to some degree before, whether it's shoving, whether it's something. I just don't think you go from zero to 100 on this situation like that. And I think that Ray Rice right now is doing everything he can to say the right things, do the right things, and put himself, while he's back in the spotlight, try to create a spotlight around the good works he's done. Look at how much I've changed. I am really skeptical, you know, that Ray Rice is genuine about this, quite frankly. Now, these guys see him up close and personal. I'm not saying people can never change, but what do we expect him to do as he tries to get back in the good graces of the decision makers of the National Football League, but put his best foot forward?
Look, I don't know that for me, if it matters all that much whether Ray Rice has changed or not, right? Like, they're talking about the impact he can have away from the field for what, awareness? Like, I just, it's a weird issue to me.
I think they're saying, like, he can, you know, when he speaks as a guy who was a hero to a lot of young men, he can send a strong message that I'm not above it. It's not something that's acceptable in any forum or format. I think that can be a powerful message.
I don't know. Like, people who are willing to hit women, I'm not sure that Ray Rice saying that it's bad to hit women is going to have any effect on that going forward. I just don't know how much of an effect that's going to have. From a football perspective, I don't think he can play. Like, I just think that he was washed up. It was coming to the end of the career anyway. Baltimore was going to have to make a decision with him over the course of last year and going into this offseason anyway, because of the level of play he was giving the Baltimore Ravens organization. I don't have a big issue if a team wants to bring him in. It wouldn't bother me if a team brought Ray Rice in for a tryout this offseason. We would have, that's fine, right?
I think he has the right to a second chance, but it would bother me if it were the team that I cared about. It would.
It wouldn't bother me all that, but like, if he came here to Jacksonville, whatever. Like, I don't think he's going to make the team anyway, anywhere that he goes. So it wouldn't bother me all that much.
What about if it's Junior Gallette, who could help this team, right? He's a good player. He has had double-digit sacks the last couple of years, and he's been accused of a couple of violent situations involving women. Okay?
Right.
And I know it's two as opposed to one, but would that bother you?
I'm kind of like, this issue for me is almost like steroids in baseball. I'd be fine if they're never allowed to play again. Like, it wouldn't bother me if they say, you hit a woman, gone. You know, it's not
either.
It's not a question. It's Junior Gallette doesn't get to play football anymore. Ray Rice doesn't get to play football anymore. You know, it wouldn't bother me at all if that was the case. That's not the case in the NFL right now. So am I personally bothered a little bit by, you know, a guy who I know has hit a woman coming in? A little bit. But at the same time, I don't know him. I know something about him, but that doesn't mean that I know that guy and know that he's a serial abuser of women. I don't know those kinds of things. I believe in second chances for these guys. So to that degree, I'm okay with them getting a chance, even if it is with a team that I cover or care about. I'm okay with them getting another chance, but at the same time, I'm also okay if everybody says, no, we're not touching anyone who has participated in something like that. It's beyond reason to bring that kind of person in. I'm fine with that.
I'll say this in terms of, can he, you know, you said you're not sure he's going to have an impact on the minds of young guys who may be inclined to do this kind of thing. I don't know if you ever see the Beyond Scared Straight programs that are on. I used to love watching the Scared Straight stuff years ago. Now they have Beyond Scared Straight, you know, where they take at-risk teens who are getting in various degrees of trouble, not quite in the penitentiary yet, but on that road, and they go in and they try to shock them into what life is really like behind bars. And while this is not an apples-to-apples comparison, to say, hey, I came from here. I rose to here. I had it all. I was, you know, a Super Bowl champion. I was this. I was that. I was making millions of dollars, and I made this one mistake, and now look. Now, Do I expect that if he talks to a group of 100 young men, that 100 young men are going to walk out of there and never do anything wrong again? No, but that's not how it works. You No. try to save the ones you can save and try to make an impact, and you try to cast a, you know, a broad brush and reach out to as many of these people as you can. And if you save a percentage, well, that's better than nothing, I guess. So I'm not saying Ray Rice needs to save the world. I just question his motivations. Would he, if he were still employed in the National Football League? Or will he, 5 years from now, when he's clearly done out of his window of playing football, will he continue to be an advocate for this? Maybe he is a change man. I'm just a cynic, and I'm a skeptic. And when I hear these things, that this stuff is more important to him than football, I don't believe it, quite frankly.
Yeah, we'll see. I doubt we're going to be paying attention to what Ray Rice is doing in 4 or 5 years, but I mean, if he's serious about this, then he'll still be doing this stuff.
Oh, I'm sure we, you know what, that's the thing. We won't be,
no.
But I'm saying, and I'm more like,
if he gets in trouble again, we'll see that.
Right.
Like, beyond that, we're not going to see anything he does anymore.
I'm saying it more as a mental exercise. More.
No, I know
I'm
you
not
are.
Really curious. I'm not so much that I'm going to look up Ray Rice in 5 years and say, you know, what is Ray Rice's life
Let
like
me check
right
what
now?
This guy's doing.
I'm just, as I sit here today, I wonder whether or not that's going to continue to hold true. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on that or anything else. As far as the Jacksonville Jaguars are concerned, Blake Bortles should be at the podium in just a couple of minutes, so the tweets will start rolling in on what Blake has to say. And we don't expect anything earth-shattering, but like I said, I think one of the things, and not just for today, but one of the things going forward as he gets deeper into the season, and we might not have a clear picture of this until after the 2015 year, is the difference in the impact of Greg Olsen coming in. We're going to see some of it on the field. Is the offense better? Is it more efficient? Now, part of that is going to be improved personnel. Excuse me. But in terms of Blake directly benefiting from the presence of Greg Olsen, what kind of things is he doing differently than the last guy, in Jed Fish, that is facilitating growth in Blake as a quarterback?
Sure.
I think that's one of the big storylines of this football season.
I think it is, too. And I think when we were talking earlier about, you know, would you rather see him successful early or late, I think because of the change in offensive coordinator and philosophy, I think late is a much better indicator of what this team is going to be. We all have questions about how quickly they're going to pick up this offense. Not excuses made for the team. They're going to be held accountable by everyone for whatever the result is on the field, even early in the season. But I think with a bunch of guys going into their second and third year in the league on that side of the ball, with an offensive line that's going to need some time to gel together, you hope it comes together quick because you like them a lot better than you like the guys you had on that offense last year, along with the new offensive coordinator. If it doesn't look good in November and December on that side of the ball, and they have their pieces, it's a big problem going into 2016 for this football team.
And that's something I think that John brought up, that, you know, that's something Gus Bradley had to weigh. Here's a guy who's won 7 games. He can't afford to throw another season away in the one-loss column, right?
No.
I mean, it's winning time. And I'm not saying they look at it that way. Certainly, they want to win, and they have expectations, which brought me to a point I brought up earlier about Gus. I got to believe, in the back of his mind, he lets himself wonder from time to time or think what the win total could be or what the potential of this team in that regard is. But beyond that, just the fact that, look, he's doing, and they have continued to operate under this premise, he and Dave Caldwell, don't do what's right for me in the short term, do what's right for the organization in the long term. And if you continue to make those kind of decisions, your own future is going to take care of itself. And that's pretty high-minded thinking, actually, when you've won 7 games, and as we pointed out now, nobody's gotten that third year, as Ryan O'Halloran pointed out, nobody's gotten that third year winning that few games in the first 2 seasons, and to be able to do that and still take that chance to change the offensive coordinator because you think ultimately that payoff is going to be greater if you make that move. It's better for the long-term benefit of Blake Bortles and therefore the Jacksonville Jaguars, but in the short term, what you're talking about, the adjustment period that you have with a new OC coming in, you hope that's as quick as possible because, boy, Tony, if they're 0-4 after, you know, Carolina, Miami, New England, Indy, going down to Tampa.
And look dysfunctional.
Right, and just, you know, it's you're going to hear nothing more frequently than same old Jags. Whether it's true or not, you're going to hear that, and there's going to be an anger From some, there's going to be a malaise. From others, there's going to be I told you so. There's going to be all kinds of...
And it'll all be deserved. Like, if they get to that point, all that's in play, and it's well-deserved. It's deserved to a degree now. I mean, they've won 7 games in 2 years. You can hold them accountable to whatever standard you want to as a fan. You know, no one's going to tell you what you can and can't expect out of your favorite team as a fan in the National Football League. I think you can look at examples in the league. I think there is some level of expectation this year for that New York Giants offense, right? With Eli Manning and Victor Cruz coming back and Odell Beckham Jr. going into his second year in the
league.
Second
year of the coordinator, right? Working with Eli.
There are expectations. If you go and look at what that Giants offense was doing early last year with a new offensive coordinator, new philosophy to everything they were doing with a guy that had been in the league for a long time and Eli Manning and has been successful in the NFL, they were bad. On the offensive side of the ball, they were bad. But the expectations on offense for the Giants are pretty good right now. Because over the last 5 or 6 weeks, they were a really good offensive football team. And now there's expectations for that team going into 2015. And if the Jaguars changing what they're doing on offense doesn't look good late in the season, if they go through an entire 2015 like they went through an entire 2014, then it's not just scheme. Now you know the personnel is bad, too. Like, everything is just bad. And this rebuild that they've attempted, it's got to get blown up. I don't think it's going to come to that, but it's there in this season. And whatever the foggy expectations are from Gus Bradley as far as wins and losses this year, which I do think are foggy even for him, I think it is a focus on, look, let's get ready for Carolina and be as good as we can possibly be week one. I think whatever the expectations are, you'll feel them once we get into the season, how real they are based on the results this team is getting, especially early on in the 2015 season.
All right, we'll take a break, come take a look at the fan feedback spotlight on the other side. Also, check in on Jags Twitter, see if anything interesting coming out of Blake Bortles' introductory year two press conference as we get ready to start training camp now. Just days away, rookies, quarterbacks in the fold, veterans report, the remainder of the veterans reporting on Thursday, and Jaguars Today will be live on Friday. Season ticket holders, practice is open to you this Friday, and we'll see you out there on the Florida Blue practice fields. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony continue live from Everbank on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. And just like that, poof, he was gone.
Yeah,
I'm not talking
done.
About Kaiser Soze. I'm talking about Blake Bortles. Poof, he's gone. He's done. In and out real quick, Tony. Quick and painless. We know that Bowanko and Wisniewski apparently have different butt sizes. That's been the big quote of the morning. What's it like working with two different centers? Has he even taken snaps from Wisniewski?
I doubt it. I mean, unless they're doing something on the side, or whatever.
Taking some snaps.
I don't think he was working out at OTAs.
I don't think the different butt size has impacted practice yet.
Not yet.
That's one of the stories, too, though.
But it's coming.
We see Stefan Wisniewski on the field.
Yeah.
And will he? I think people are just assuming he's going to beat out Bowanko for the job based on his experience. And I would think that, all things being equal, I would give him the better odds in the competition as well. He's got over 60 games of starting experience in the National Football League. What else caught your eye? Anything else on Jack's Twitter?
We've talked about, you know, when Blake left the OTAs and minicamp, he said that his plan was to go back out to California and work with Tom House a little bit over the interim here. Apparently, he did not get out there. He said the only time that he got out of Jacksonville was to go out and play golf in Tahoe in that same event that Scobie played in. And he did say he's been working with the wide receivers at some of the local high schools here. So he's still getting work in with the guys here on the roster, but did not go back out to see Tom House, at least in this 5 weeks off.
When asked if John Osier were the backbone of the organization, Blake Bortles replied, no comment. No, he didn't. He was not asked that.
Yeah.
But I bet he would.
And the rest, it's pretty standard stuff. How do you feel about the young working with Allen Robinson? It's going to be exciting to work with Allen Robinson. You know, it's that kind of thing. Yeah, looking forward to getting on the
right
field.
Oh,
with
yeah,
Rashad
he's good,
Green.
good player. Want to work with that guy? Hey, and that's fine. You know, what do you want him to say?
Yeah.
If you really want to know what the definition of excitement, thrilling, edge of your seat, hair raising theater, go look at Johnny O's Twitter timeline. And he took a picture there, Blake, at the podium. And just take a look at Ryan O'Halloran, just off to Blake's right. And just look, I mean, that's why when we get Ryan O'Halloran in here, Tony, the ratings spike, because he brings that energy level that's manic, right? It's just tough to replicate. Just look at him with that thousand-yard stare in his eyes, pen hanging askew from the corner of his mouth.
Yeah.
Tell me he doesn't love his job, Ryan O'Halloran, ladies and gentlemen. Your beat reporter for the Florida Times.
Thrilled to be here. At 11:30 on a Monday morning.
My goodness. TJ Yeldon was next up at the podium,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's talking right now.
All right.
So said he likes, what did you do in the off time? He said he played basketball and watched Netflix. There you go.
I did not play basketball, but I watched a lot of Netflix myself this summer.
Yep.
So TJ and I are like very similar people.
That's right. You're basically brothers.
I'm basically the same guy.
Yeah.
As who we are. I'm also like, because I watched The Dark Knight Rises, not The Dark Knight. I did name The Dark, I kept calling it
The
Dark Knight.
Did you watch all three this week? I know you were saying.
I did. Well, I did. I wanted, Colin was going to watch Batman Begins, and I wanted to rewatch it to see if it was okay for him. And I did, and I thought it was okay, you know, for an 11-year-old. Not going to watch Dark Knight. Sorry. I'm not going to, you know, just there's a little too much psychologically disturbing stuff in that one.
Joker's, he's pushing
right.
Some limits.
When you were gone, when we had Doom in here, we did our top five overrated movies of all time, and I kept referring to The Dark Knight as The Dark Knight Rises. I was referencing The Dark Knight movie, which I think is well overrated. Good movie, but to be ranked like in the top five all time on Rotten Tomatoes is absurd.
That's a little ridiculous, but that doesn't. I mean, that's just people go on there and vote constantly.
Come on. People love that movie.
Anyway, I love that movie.
Let's not get far off the.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
My point was going to be I am more like Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight Rises. I have no cartilage in my knees, I feel like, as well.
Right.
I feel like that old man who needs a cane to get around.
You got big guys breaking your back?
Despite that, I'm 46. I do not have big guys breaking my back, but I do. Thank a leave for that because
right.
I take it religiously on days before and after I play golf.
That's my guy, Tom Hardy.
There you go. We got Terrence on the line. Is that right? Let's ding him in. That should answer the question. Hello, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, guys.
What's up?
What's up, Mike? Before I ask you a question, I wanted to get on you about something that you said about a week ago.
You're gonna go back a week. All right, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, Pat Sonnet?
What's up, man?
Right. Didn't I hear you say you went out into the water to go get your iron, your golf?
Yes.
Iron went out in the water and there was a gate out there.
Yes, that was like a couple summers ago. But yes, I did say that.
Oh, that was a couple summers. Oh, I thought that was recent. Well, even though it was a couple summers ago, why are you going in the water to go get your iron?
Because that's where my iron is.
But, Mike, there's a gator out there.
Well, I didn't know the gator was out there.
He had a lookout, but
I had
was
a
doing
lookout.
A terrible
right.
job.
Tony knows the story. I had a lookout, and until I started to get out of the water, I was in the like standing in the deep, knee-deep water towards the edge, and I looked back and saw the 8-footer coming for me about 25 feet away. I didn't realize there was a big gator in there, Terrence. So had I known that, I probably would have just said, you know what?
He
let me go to play it against
iron.
Sports and
right.
find a replacement 6-iron. So,
okay, that's so what you do next time.
I didn't willingly go in there with the alligator. The alligator happened to be in there.
No. It's not like the 4th of July story with the signs all over the place.
I didn't
place.
Say
do
Fritos
not
that gator and then
right.
jump in the water.
There are gators in this water, and the guy drunkenly jumped in, and the gator came out from under the dock and took the guy under, never to be seen again.
Yeah, so it wasn't as bad as you're making it out to be, Terrence. But thank you
okay.
for your concern.
Yeah, you know, that's because I love you, Mike.
I love you, too.
But I didn't know that. I thought he was supposed to be going out there to see Tom House over this break. But
that's what I thought, too. I thought there was going to be some of that, too. But I guess we got the wrong message, or we were misinterpreted something, or we're mistaken. I don't know.
Okay, so I want to know, do you know the things that he was supposed to work on so I and not me, you know, and the fans can see what to look for at a training camp, or do you just wait to the season start or preseason because he's a gamer. Does it? I mean, should you notice this difference in training camp or what?
Honestly, Terrence, I don't know if we are going to notice much different from it. I've heard people, because keeping in mind, Tony and I couldn't see the OTA practices because they all occurred while we were on the air, and they were not open to the public, so we did not broadcast live from the field. And even when we do, from our vantage point, we really can't see what's going on. So we relied on what other people told us, and I, Tony, as I recollect, some did say he looked like he had tighter mechanics, but others said, you know, let's be honest, it's really hard to tell if there's anything noticeable. And so to me, Terrence, and we appreciate the call, we got to move on, so ding him out if you would, Tyler. But I would say that, yes, I do think all that is well and good in the preseason. Game results are really what's going to matter. You can, if you want to get yourself tied up in knots, if you see him throw some errant passes in preseason or in training camp, what have you, you can do that. But in the end, if he plays well on Sunday afternoons, that's really all that matters. I don't particularly care what his mechanics look like if he delivers the ball consistently.
Sure.
And that's why you want better mechanics to do that. But if you can, whatever your mechanics are, if you're consistently delivering the ball with a high degree of accuracy, Tony, that's what you're asked to do.
Absolutely. And we'll see what it looks like once we get into games. By the way, remember last year at this point, Chad Henne was the team's starting quarterback, not Blake Bortles. So the two guys were basically splitting reps in practice every day. That's not going to be the case this year. Blake Bortles is the guy. He's the starting quarterback for this team, the potential franchise quarterback for this team. So even the reps are going to be a little bit different for Blake this year than they were last year. And we'll see if whatever changes he feels like he's made to those mechanics have an effect starting this weekend. I mean, it's time for it to show up on the field now for Blake Bortles, and we'll see if it's helped him. And I've said before, if it helps him mentally, if nowhere else, good enough for me, if he feels better about what he's doing in the pocket.
The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships ask Jaguar fans every day, what drives you today? In the fan feedback spotlight, we asked you about Ray Rice. And not from a he's washed up perspective, at least that wasn't my intent, because a lot of people said, I don't want Ray Rice on my team because I don't think he can play anymore. The point would be, if a team signs him, that means they think he can help their football team. This is more of an off-the-field issue. When we asked you, does Ray Rice deserve to be back in the National Football League this season, as a couple of founders of an anti-domestic violence group are advocating on his behalf, or at least supporting his return to the NFL? And if so, would you be okay with it being your team that signed him? Again, presuming they think he can play. Tony, pretty near unanimous lack of support for Ray Rice, either returning at all or certainly returning to a team that anyone cares about, returning to their particular team.
Yes, there is. From Colby, we got definitely not. Jaguars already have a DUI Ravens running back on their roster. We don't need a woman beater as well. From Irish Jaguar, hell no. The 15 seconds I just spent thinking about him is more than he deserves. Next question from Daniel. Ray should get another shot. Life is all about redemption and second chances. From Duval Doom, everyone deserves a second chance, but hypocritically, I'd rather not have him on my team. And from Hardy Bros, he does deserve another chance. However, his value isn't worth the media distraction. Hashtag Cali Jag fan.
I got a couple here on Facebook, actually, that supported, or at least wouldn't, you know, stand in the way of that happening, at least attitude-wise. Not that you can necessarily really stand in the way of it happening, but this one is the most thorough. Joshua Lee writes, yes, if Vic can kill dogs and serve jail time and come back, if Burris can bust a cap in his leg and come back, if Peterson can take a switch to his son and beat him too much and come back, Rice should be given a second chance. As much as I despise these losers off the field, they were successful on the field. I don't agree with their actions. It's disgusting and stupid, but he'll get a chance. Same can be said for the multiple morons who have been popped for substance abuse or sports enhancers. Hashtag Jaguars today. Look, is it hypocritical to say he deserves a second chance, but I don't want him on my team? If it is, then I'm a hypocrite. Because in theory, I'm okay with people getting second chances in life, and nobody ever got a second chance. Imagine anybody who served any time in prison, never being able to get a job again, which would lead them to further and further crime, which is a problem to some degree anyway. But imagine if no one ever got a second chance. So, yes, I believe in second chances. I am just not comfortable rooting for a guy who punched a woman in the face, punched allegedly the woman he loved more than any woman in the world in the face, knocked her cold, and then the callous disregard that he showed her by dragging her out, kind of nudging her with his toe.
Right.
Oh, come on. I mean, so we all know. We don't need to rehash that. But so, yeah, if somebody gives him a second chance, I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it means the end of Western civilization. I don't want it to be on a team I care about. And there you have it. So and that's whether he can play or not, quite frankly. I don't care if he did average 6 yards a carry. He can do it on somebody else's roster. That's going to do it for us today. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Northeast Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. We appreciate those guys. Appreciate the Ozone. John Osier stopping by today. And we'll have plenty of audio, I'm sure, from the various Jaguar press conferences. And we're hopeful to catch up with Blake over the next couple of days here live on Jaguars Today. Hopefully Gus Bradley as well before training camp officially opens up with their first practice on Friday. But it's here. Now you feel it's here that this week has kicked off. Jags are in the building. They'll be on the practice field in a matter of days. See all you season ticket holders out there on Friday. In the meantime, for Fat Tony, for John Osier, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime straight ahead on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair. Woo!